I don't know if you want this on the tape, but when I was a kid, I used to think 60 years old was really old. I had to tell you that. I used to think 60 was just so damn old. I'm 60, and I don't think it's that old anymore. I feel like I'm inside. Sometimes I feel like I'm 60 when I'm walking up and down, you know, unlevel things or stairs because my legs are so compromised over the years. The weight that I carry really takes its toll on me. But 60 is not that old, and we have somebody here today that is turning 60. And I'm going to ask, is Norman here? Where's Norman?
Hey.
Norman. I'm going to ask all you guys to join me in singing happy birthday to Norman, who's turning 60 years old today.
All right.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Norman. Happy birthday to you.
Okay. So we've seen that Eddie has been sober now for 2 months. He came into the Oxford Room in September of 1934. This is now the end of November 1934, and he's got 2 months of sobriety. Let's go to the bottom of page 8, and as I said before, Bill's story is divided into two distinct sections. The first section of Bill's story is the first 8 pages about his plunge into alcoholism, and the second 8 pages is about how a spiritual experience came in and effected a recovery therefrom. Bottom of 8. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. And you have to remember that Evie and Bill did lots of drinking together. It was years since I can remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility, the very thing an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little crack about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yeah, the old boy was on fire, all right. Bless his heart, but let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. But he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men, Seaver Graves Jr. and Roland, had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action that was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. He had come to pass this experience along to me if I cared to have it. There are people out there that don't want to have this information. They don't want to do this. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. Okay. I was shocked, but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. And to me, hopeless means I'm out of ideas. I can no longer control this on my own. I can't even pretend to. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that proper temperance pledge I never signed, my grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings, his insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died, these recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. Now watch your capital letters here. I had always believed in a power, capital, greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. A cipher isn't nothing. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much imprecise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation, but that was as far as I had gone. Now, Bill is taking this information in of the religious angle, the God angle, if you will. And how many of us have resisted that? And we're going to see him doing that because we have had pain in our life and we have had disappointment in our life and we have had things that just didn't go our way and ultimately we blamed God. That if there was this loving, wonderful God, then why this and why that? And this is what's going on in Bill Wilson's mind as he's pondering these things. And I'm growing up in a family where my father had a lot of issues with this God idea. That if there was a God, why didn't you help us? And if there was a God, why did you let them kill my mother? And why did you let them kill my brothers and sisters? Why did you let them kill my nieces and nephews under the age of 6? Why did you let them kill my grandparents? And why did you take our money and take our property and take our business and take everything we had? Why did you do that? Why didn't you come down there and stop them? Why did you let this happen? And I'm growing up in this, and I'm hearing every day of my life that they're going to come and kill us. I'm hearing this every day. And I see my father crying, and I see him crying, and I see him sad. And I think to myself, yes, how could there be a God? And many of you, maybe you didn't have that exact experience. Maybe yours was different. Maybe your experience wasn't murder and mayhem. Maybe it was abandonment. Maybe your experience was a divorce that you didn't want. Maybe your experience was you had parents that you couldn't rely on. Or maybe you had wonderful parents, but things just didn't go your way. Now let's see where Bill goes with this information. And they have a name for people, by the way, that have these thoughts and that have these ideas. They're called human beings. Because we have these things in our life that hurt us. Okay. Where am I? I've always believed in a power, right? No. With ministers, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Right? With ministers in the world's religious things. I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. To Christ I conceded a certainty of a great man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him, capital. His moral teaching most excellent. For myself I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. The wars which had been fought. Now listen to this paragraph. You could say the same thing today. Listen to what he's saying because these are timeless things. These are timeless issues. The wars which had been fought, the burnings and chicanery that religious dispute had facilitated made me sick. I honestly doubted whether unbalanced the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe and since the power of God in human affairs was negligible, the brotherhood of man a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss universal, and he certainly had me. But my friend sat before me and he made the point-blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. You don't have to wait for page 83 for promises. Ebony had been taken to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. that floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revived right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. Bill Wilson knew Ebby. They had done an enormous amount of drinking and getting drunk together. And what did he know about Ebby? That Ebby was as powerless over liquor as he was. And here was Ebby Thatcher, and he was sober. So he wasn't looking for the splitting of the Red Sea. He wasn't looking for the oil that burned for 8 days when it was supposed to burn for 1 day. He wasn't looking for all the things that Cecil B. DeMille can do better than anybody else, and that is create these effects. He was looking across the kitchen table at someone that he knew to be a drunk, to be a sot, to be an alcoholic just like him, and he was sober. Now, look around this room right now. We're in Santa Barbara, California at Costa Mesa Retreat Center, one of the most beautiful retreat centers you will ever see in your life. My two favorite retreat centers are both in California. One is in Oceanside, California, and one is here. And I have been at retreat centers all over this country. Look around you at the beauty of what you see. Look at the sunlight, look at the forestation, look at the peace and serenity that every molecule of this place screams at. It screams at you with beauty. It screams at you with its serenity. Now look inside the room, and this is what I see. Some of you are awake, and some of you are not, and that's okay. I'm used to that. I don't take it personally. But I see a room of people that are compulsive overeaters. Now, I don't know what you have in your head, and I don't know what you have in your car, and I don't know what you have back in your room, or in your suitcase, or what have you. I don't know. But I see a room full of compulsive overeaters that had every reason in the world not to come here. And many of you almost talked yourself out of coming, and some of you did talk yourself out of coming. I bet that's the case. I've been doing these a long time. And not one of you is compulsively overeating right now. Now, if that isn't a miracle, I don't know what is. I don't know what is. Now, some of you that I've known for a long time, many years I've known you, and some of you I've known for a very short time. And Bob back there, I wish I didn't know at all. I tease because I love, you know that. I tease because I love. And my sponsor is here, and many of you I know well, and some of you I don't know much at all. But what I do know is if you're here, I'm going to assume you are a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety, and you're not eating right now. And some of you are struggling with not eating right now. And some of you are counting the minutes until I'll shut up and you can go get lunch. And some of you are in peace. Some of you are at peace, and that comes from working the steps. And this is the beginning. This is the flashpoint of step two. This is where step two is going to come into the program. That now Bill Wilson has the problem that he got from Silkworth, and now he's going to get the solution, which is going to come in from Ebby, who brought it with him from the Oxford Group movement, who were people unconcerned with alcoholism or a recovery therefrom, that were practicing first century Christianity to the best of their ability. And Bill Wilson is seeing Ebby, and Ebby doesn't know the problem, but he's sober. Bill knows the problem, but he's drunk. Let's see where we go from there. He's getting the solution. And the solution will only come through a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. I saw that my friend, bottom of 11, was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. What a beautiful metaphor. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still roused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of the Tsar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. Now, Ebby is about to say something to Bill that will open the door to tens of millions of suffering people around the world. And he is going to change it now in its tone, in its direction. It is now not going to be a religious solution to this problem, but a spiritual solution to this problem. My friend then said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" And that will open the door to countless millions of people. Oh, sorry. He says, my friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Now, when we see these words, why don't you choose your own conception of God? We think of internally that it means you can be any religion that you want. And it does. You are welcome here no matter what or who you are. We don't care. We welcome you. Sorry. We welcome you. But what it also means is that I have to have a conception of God that I am willing to believe in. And that means I'm going to have to discard a lot of what I learned as a child. And I'm going to have to create a new God. And that's where a lot of sponsorship in Overeaters Anonymous will fall down. I go through a description of God with people that I am not going to criticize at all, but what is it that you are willing to believe in? I don't need a judgmental God. I don't need a God that's going to kick my ass. I don't need a God that's going to criticize me. I don't need a God that's going to try to take away my food on Yom Kippur or make it so that I can't eat bread for 8 days on Passover. That may be good for some people. That doesn't work for me. I need a God that is merciful. I need a God that is flexible. I need a God that is with me. And in chapter 4 it says, constant companionship with my Creator. I feel God with me all the time. I'm not one of these guys that walks down the street and say, God, what do you think? Think the Bears will win tonight? I don't know. What do you think? I don't do that. But I feel God with me all the time. It's sometimes very frightening for me to do these retreats. Now, when I do San Diego or I do LA-based retreats or LA-based events, or here, I have people that I know for a long time that makes it a lot more comfortable for me. And except for Bob, most of the people that I know are very nice people and I really enjoy seeing them. But the bottom line is still this. Most of the time I'm going far from Scottsdale, far from Phoenix, and I don't know them and they don't know me, and that can be very frightening. That can be kind of scary. So I have to work my step 10. There's a guy in a blue shirt over there that's gotten many of my 10-step calls because I'm apprehensive. I'm anxious about what are they going to think of me and what's going to... All I'm going to do is serve God today, and that's going to be enough, and it works out just fine. But I have to have a God that is flexible. I write every day, and when I write, I welcome any changes to this schedule you deem necessary. Do with me as you will. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. I trust my God to make better decisions than me. I trust my God to guide me in a direction that He wants me to go in and to take care of me as I would take care of a little child that loves me, that doesn't judge me or wants to beat me up. That's the kind of God I have in my head. And that's the kind of God I have in my heart. And I invite you to work with your sponsor or work with your clergyman or work with your theologian or whoever it is you're going to work with, or work it out in your own mind of a God that a power greater than yourself that you're willing to believe in. Without that, you're dead. You're dieting with group support. Step two is the most underutilized step. And when you see people struggling in 4, 9, 10, 11, and 12, you're seeing really the basis for the struggle is in 2. 2 and 10 are the trapdoor steps. Don't work them properly, and shoop, you go right back into the Kit Kat bars, right back into the Almond Joy bars, and right back into the Butterfinger bars. Before you can say Jackie Robinson, you're going to go right back in there. So most of the time where you see people struggling in this program, what is the step that they are confounded by? It is step 2. And that's why I try to spend so much time talking about 2 and where it comes from. I can't emphasize this enough. You see people, they have been in these rooms for years. Many of them are a very normal weight. But you bring up that idea of a higher power. A lot of them are dieting with group support. They just bristle with antagonism. They just don't like that idea. I have one life. I'm going to have a God that I'm going to hold hands with that I do like, that I'm willing to believe in. And I had to extricate from that idea of the God of my childhood who wouldn't keep me out of the food for 5 seconds. For 5 seconds. So I invite you to work on these things. You know, and there are theologians, and then we'll go back to the story here, but there are theologians, and there are historians, and there are clergy people, and poets and musicians that are going to spend the days of their life theorizing about what God is and what God isn't. Let them have it. There's 2 things I need to know about God, bottom line. There is 1, and it's not me. Those are the 2 things I need to know about God. There is 1, and it's not me. And before we leave that subject, it's got to be a power greater than myself. If I have a God that has skin, be it a woman, be it a man, be it money, I'm dead. It has to be a power greater than myself. And you see so many people today, their wives, their girlfriends, their husbands, their lovers, their dogs, their kids, whatever it is, money, that's their God, they're dead. Because those are not powers greater than yourself. So I invite you to work on that. If you don't have a God you're at peace with, you deserve one. This isn't a dress rehearsal. Okay. That statement hit me hard, page 12. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. Now pay attention to this next part if you're awake. If you're sleeping, I'm sorry. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. There's nothing in there that says you have to believe. It says you have to be willing to believe. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon the foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want Him enough. And how do I demonstrate that I want Him enough? I take action. This isn't a program for people who need it. This isn't a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. There's no chapter in here that says into thinking. There's no chapter in here that says into needing or wanting. But there is a chapter that says into action. And if you come to the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club, where I go to meetings almost every single day of my life, and I missed my big book study there today, but okay, that's fine. You're going to find that the group that we have of OA meetings is called the Into Action Group. It's called the Into Action Group of Meetings for that very reason. Okay. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have Him with me, and He came. But soon the sense of His presence, now watch your capitals here, had been blotted out by worldly clamors. mostly goes within myself, and so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. When he talks about worldly clamors, what is he talking about? He's talking about money, and he's talking about sex, and he's talking about relationships, and he's talking about life. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, there are going to be things happening that are going to piss me off. And there are things that people are going to do today that I wish they would stop doing. And there are people not doing things that I wish they would start doing. And there are going to be people that are going to go east when I want them to go west, and north when I want them to go south. And then I'm just going to throw in the towel and say, screw this God thing. Nobody's doing what I want them to do. But when I embrace God, whatever they're doing, however they're doing it, whatever direction they're going in, I need to work my steps, and I need to stay inside my hula hoop. I need to stay in my hula hoop. Not my circus, not my monkeys. I'm going to work my steps. I'm going to work my program. And whatever it is they're doing is really okay with me, because God knows how to run the world, and He doesn't need suggestions from me. You know what they don't have in heaven? A suggestion box. Now, Bill has been going to Oxford group meetings between the end of November and the middle of December, and he has now been exposed to the Oxford group theories, the Oxford group absolutes of absolute love, absolute purity, absolute honesty, absolute devotion. And he is going to these meetings, but he is still drinking. So he enters the hospital for the third time on December the 13th, 1934. And on the morning of December 14th, he has some things happen to him that we're going to read about now and see how well it tallies up to what we do in our lives, hopefully. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time, treatment scene wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. There I humbly offered myself to God, as I then understood Him, to do with me as He would. I placed myself unreservedly under His care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without Him I was lost. Those are the first three steps of what we know today. So he's working steps 1, 2, and 3. I ruthlessly faced my sins, step 4, and became willing to have my newfound friend in capital take them away, root and branch, step 6 and 7. I have not had a drink since. So he's worked 1, 2, 3, 6, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies, step 5. We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment, step 8. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong, step 9. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability, step 10. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense, step 11. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, prayer and meditation, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as He would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request for on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Tomorrow morning on Sunday, we're going to tally up this paragraph with what we see on page 87 and see how close the language is, and to see how close the idea is in him working step 11 there and what we see in our step 11. My friend promised, that's Abby, that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have all the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things, were the essential requirements. Simple but not easy, a price he had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the power of life who presides over us all. That does not mean some things. I don't give God my food but take my relationship life. I don't give God my food but try to manage my money. I don't give God my food but try to manage my life relative to medicine or dental care or anything like that. God either is or He is not. He is nothing or He is everything. What is my choice to be? What am I going to choose? And I choose a God that is everything. And that means I give Him every area of my life. Excuse me. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, and from the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. You don't have to wait for page 83 to get promises. Listen to this. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great... I used to be able to talk. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. I knew I'd get through that sentence somehow. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. So Bill is having a vital spiritual experience in the town's hospital, and he talked for the rest of his life how the white light came into the room and he felt God with him. And he's thinking, have I gone crazy? Well, he calls the doctor. He says, for a moment I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor to ask if I was still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head saying, something has happened to you I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who had such experiences. He knows they are real. Now, before we read the next paragraph, remember this, that Bill is a selfish drunk. If he couldn't kiss it, drink it, spend it, or use it, he had no use for it whatsoever. He is a liar. He is a drunk. He is an alcoholic. He's just like me. He's exactly like me. He's a manipulator. I lied when the truth would have served me better. I manipulated and I used people and I hurt people along the way. But because he has just had this experience for probably the only time in his entire life, let's see where he goes from here. Page 14. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. And that is step 12. So we see Bill working the 12 steps with Abby and God in the town's hospital, and we see that his spiritual experience changed him and altered him so that he never found it necessary ever again in his life to take another drink of alcohol. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. But if he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. Now here's a call that I probably get 150 times a year. I'm on the LA podcasts. And I'm on, there's a phone meeting that I've spoken on, and I'm on there, and I get this call 150 times through these avenues. My name is so-and-so, and I'm eating, and I'll tell them, well, you need to work the steps, and they say, well, I worked them years ago, and I'm still eating. And I say, you're not working them anymore. Well, I call in my food, and calling in your food is not working the steps. I must do this unceasingly. I must pray unceasingly. I must work steps all the time. If I am unwilling to work steps all the time, I am now dieting with group support. And if I am dieting with group support, it is not if I'm going to eat Kit Kat bars and Snickers bars and Butterfinger bars. Again, it's only a matter of when. That there is no time until I'm in the box, in the coffin, that I stop working steps. A woman in Boston, Massachusetts came up to me. I recently did a retreat there in Boston, Wareham, Massachusetts. And she came up to me and said, when I'm done working my steps, can I call you? And I said, no. And she looked at me appallingly and she said, why not? And I said, because when you're done working the steps, you'll be dead. Because when you're done working the steps, that means your life is over and you're about to meet the grand sponsor up in heaven. We do not stop working the steps. We're going to talk Sunday morning, and we're going to talk today as we share some of the myths about step 4, 3 and 4 are the most misunderstood steps. 2 and 10 are the most underutilized, but 3 and 4 are the most misunderstood. We're going to talk about working these steps every single day of our lives without ceasing. I guarantee you, if I need to make a 10-step call, this guy's going to get a call from me, and maybe some of you will too. I don't make all the calls to him. My God, he'd be on the phone with me constantly. Okay. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm. There's that word, entejos, from God. To the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found, now tattoo this in your brain, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. When all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day, and I'm going to be beating myself up on the plane tomorrow if I don't mention that when Epi says faith without works was dead, that's going to be in here 4 times in the book, because that was Dr. Bob's wife, Ann Smith's favorite Bible verse. She believed that faith without works was dead, was so important. And you've heard me say this. This is not a program for people who need it. It's not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who do it. And the original company that they formed to publish this book, the book was written in 37 and 38, came out in April of 39. The original company was called Works Publishing Company after that Bible verse. And that's why they named it Works Publishing Company. If you have a share of stock in Works Publishing that you bought for $1 at that time, or 25 cents or something, it's worth a ton. If you just have that piece of paper, it's worth a ton. And if you want to know what to buy me for my birthday, you can get me a 1-1. It's big red. It's first edition, first printed. You can pick one up for about $20,000 to $25,000. Makes a great birthday gift for me. Okay. Now remember when we said how Bill made a host of fair weather friends and became a lone wolf? Let's see what happens in Bill's life after he embraces the program. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Did that already? Sorry. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. I'm talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. We commenced to make many fast friends. Many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. Have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitternesses of all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. In one western city, Akron, Ohio, and its environs, there are 1,000 of us in our families. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not... He could not or would not see our way of life. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. That's a warning. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it right with us right here and now. Each day, my friend, simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men, toward men, Bill Wilson, co-founder of AA, died on January 24th, 1971. Now I hope, I sincerely hope from the bottom of my heart, that in doing this, in going through this story, that it becomes a lot less about Bill Wilson, who you'll never meet in this lifetime, and more about you, more about your struggles, more about how you struggle with this idea of the solution. And so many of us, you know, so many of us, we just bristle with antagonism at this idea of the God solution to it, because we hear God and think religion. We hear God and think about that we can't make the mark. We hear God and we think that we're never going to measure up. But we can hear God now and say, that God can be what I choose and how I choose it. And I can fire a God anytime I want to. If my God stops working for me, I fire his ass. And I hire a new God. Does that sound like blasphemy to you? Does that sound like something you can't do? Do you need a God of religion? That's fine. I'm just sharing myself with you, what I need and what doesn't work for me and what does. If you choose a God of your religion and that works for you, I am not here to tell you who you should believe in or what you should believe in. I'm just here to talk about what works or doesn't work for me and many of the people that I've exposed myself to over the years that have shared with me what works for them. And I hope sincerely that as you see in the story of Bill Wilson, you see how God reaches out his munificent hand, his outstretched hand of recovery to all of us from whatever it is that we are addicted to, that you will come to know that this is the most wonderful way of life there is, because it is God-blessed. It is a God-blessed life. Now, it is 11:20 or 11:15, depending upon which time zone you're sitting in. I don't know. And we have a few minutes. So what I will do, because this is what I usually do, is I'll take some Q&A, or you can share openly. But there are some questions I do not take. Number one, please do not ask me about my food plan. What about my food plan is interesting to you? And I do not take questions about what you should do for your brother, what you should do for your neighbor, what you should do for your wife or husband or whatever it is you want. I don't answer questions about what you should do for somebody else. So given those parameters, don't, if you ask me those questions, I'll just pass you by. We can open it up. If you don't want to ask me a question and you just want to share something, this is your opportunity, and let's keep this going until, in this time zone, it's 11:45. Is that fair enough? 11:45? And then that way we can kind of gather ourselves for lunch and stuff like that. Okay, it's open for step.
So you mentioned the sense of ease and comfort that we can all get, that the Wilson got and alcohol, that we can all get from food. And you mentioned that by working the 12 steps, we can expect as a benefit from our higher power the sense of ease and comfort. Can we get a sense of ease and comfort from working the steps?
That's how
while working the steps. Yeah. Or do we have to suffer in anguish working the steps before we can get a sense of ease and comfort?
There may be a period of time where you're still dieting with group support, but you are substituting the effect of the spiritual awakening for the effect of the food. Your brain will feel better and it won't see the need to drive you into the food. This morning someone asked me, do you want to go back and eat more breakfast? And I honestly answered them, no, I don't. I really don't. And the reason is I'm working the steps, I'm praying constantly, so I get that effect from the prayer and from the work. Faith without works is dead. If I do the work, and I'm getting texts all the time, my phone in my pocket is going off like a firecracker on the 4th of July, I will answer those texts and be as helpful as I can be. I can't do it now. There's nothing I can do about it now. But there may be times when it is painful. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I'll never rise above the level of a human being. And you know what? I can work the steps and the Cubs still suck. And I can work, I can work the steps and the traffic in LA still sucks. But if I just accept it for what it is and keep getting out of myself and getting out of myself, that pain goes away. If I give into it and eat more and eat more and eat more, the pain just becomes more and more intense. Yes, you had one from way before. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, well, I marked it. The question about a bottle. I talk about a bottle. I know I get one that got me here. And in terms of Bill Wilson, where he talks about being overwhelmed with the bitter morass of self-pity. All follows my master. Mm-hmm. Would you say that was his bottom?
I would pretty much have to, because right after that, upon the visit from Eddie, he does get sober. I think for me, the bottom had to come when I had suffered enough. And for me, the bottom is this. I must fear the food more than I fear the recovery. I must be at that point where the food just wasn't working anymore for me. So I had to fear more eating more than I feared that jumping off into the unknown, that anything was better than what I had been doing, that anything was better than the way I had been living my life. And one of my first mentors in this program said to me, "Are you out of ideas yet, kid? Are you out of ideas yet, kid?" Because while I was harboring ideas on how I was going to continue eating, recovery could not take place. I have to be out of ideas. And that's where recovery takes place for me. I have a friend whose name is Josh. And he would say that the bottom is where your goals are lower than your expectations or something. A healthy person adjusts their behaviors to meet their goals, and a sick person adjusts their goals to meet their behavior. That's what he basically says. Yeah, my friend Jack from the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club. He's also famous for saying, "God is in the pause." On page 87, it says, "We pause when agitated. He loves God as He pours." I hope I answered your question. There has to come a point where I fear more eating more than I fear working the program. Yes?
Behind the story about Bill, after Bill said, "I never had another drink again," at that point, did he ever have an issue with food or with drugs? Prescription drugs or any of that
yes.
afterwards.
Yes.
Could you say a little bit about that?
Father Edward Downing was one of Bill's spiritual mentors. And Father Ed was from St. Louis, Missouri. And Father Ed encouraged Bill to start a program called Fatty's Anonymous, Obese Anonymous. Father Ed was a compulsive overeater. He said to Bill many times, "Your drug is alcohol, but my drug is butter, sugar, flour, those things." And he's encouraged him to, but Bill wasn't going to do that. He said, "Well, that's not my issue. That's not my issue." Bill, later in his life, did under the auspices of Dr. Tim Leary, in an attempt to control his depression, did some experimentation with LSD. Not the LSD that you buy on the street, but LSD that was a different kind of grade. But he did do LSD during the 1950s under the auspices of Dr. Tim Leary. But that's, that's his life, and that's fine. But he never did drink again. He never did. Yeah, absolutely. This is your time, not mine. Whatever you want, babe. Whatever you want.
Hi, I'm Todd Plummer here.
Hi, Todd.
I really do appreciate what we're talking about, especially on page 12, where it's Abbott, is it fine?
Eddie,
thank you. Where you mentioned, he said, "Why don't you choose the conception of your God?" And I struggled a lot with that issue because growing up in my faith, and I think some of you might relate with it, there was like, you just do what you're told, but don't ask questions. Especially when I'm receiving communion. But the point is that growing up for me, I couldn't understand my faith, really. I love my mother dearly, and I always take her quoted word, and she says, "Faith is to believe even when you do not want to believe." She would tell me that, and I took it to her. You know? But yet, this was the same woman who shoved my faith down her throat. And I had, you know, some kind of sense of resentment or anger to that. But it wasn't until I got in OA, in all true honesty, that I began to discover, oh, what does spirituality mean to me? Now, I don't think it's a definition. I could be wrong. Maybe somebody can correct me. The meaning of spirituality to me means, or means to, that I understand, is a relationship with something greater than myself. That's what I say. Even when I do the week, it's a relationship with something greater than myself, my higher power than myself, which I choose, and it's only for John here now, to call Lord Jesus Christ. That's just for John. But the neat part was that when I started this program, I was sort of in fear when they started talking about the concept of God. Because I'm thinking, oh shit. You know, this is going outside the perimeter of what I've been told what God is. You know, what the Lord means to me. You know, but when I started getting more into the spiritual part of it, I realized that now I can have that direct understanding, relationship to me and that God. Not waiting for someone to explain to me or told me this is what it has to be. You know? But yet, it never, ever did it allow me to say, you know what? I don't want to be part of my faith anymore. I'm still part of my faith, very much. I'm not much of a person who practices it, but I definitely like to be in fellowship with it on Sundays. I really do. I even take that moment just to sit and talk with my higher power. You know? In the last several months, I have been really focusing on trying to use my higher power to guide me in my direction of my life, except one area. My program. You know? Even to this day, I've been developing a method for almost over 8 months now, where every time I come home, I live in one of these old buildings built in 1931, and the stairs look like they're a mile high. I live on the second level. And what I do is, I treat just like the program's taught me. I take it one step at a time, and I'm talking to God in my head, or even sometimes out loud. And I may want to have who what do you say? But the point is, I take that method of practice of understanding what the program teaches me is that instead of me trying to direct where I'm going, I need to believe there's a higher power who can show me where I'm going, guide me where I'm going. Even though it may be going great, the action is going fine. You know, I get that fear of, okay, God, everything's good. You go ahead and sit in the back seat and I'll drive that. That's what gets me in trouble. You know? Do I believe that there's an actual physical disease that causes me to come to me? Well, you know, I work in the medical field. There's questions about grease and sugar, the chemical process. But in reality, the disease that we're talking about is the mental mind. I work in the psych business. I know what it means. I'm not a total expert to it, but I know what it means. And I do have to rely and depend upon something greater than me that I cannot see, feel, or touch. But I do recognize through miracles. And it's funny because one of the people on the committee here was insisting to keep calling me. And I was ignoring because I was in a depression slump. Actual depression slump. And Charlie finally said, you know what, that's not cool, John. You're not responding back. I need help. I'll be damned. That's what finally kickstarted. That's where today I can feel like I have shared. This is the first time I've shared in over 4 months. You know? And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all you guys giving me an opportunity to tell them to speak. I want my essence back. I want it back. You know? And I have a right to that. I have a right to be obscene. I have a right to live. I have a right to be here. And I can give a grace to my heart for that. So thanks.
Thank you.
I have a question, but anyway. How do you, I know in the 12 of 12 it talks about the grace of God a lot more than just this, but how to define how what the grace of God means to you?
The blessings that I see.
It's
the blessings that I see every day, and it's the adversities that I get to overcome. I see God in you know, in everything. You know, Shakespeare said, there is no good or bad, there are only things, my ego is not money here. I don't know what's good, and I don't know what's bad. And there's many jokes and many, many things about, oh, I thought this was good and it turned out bad. I thought that was bad and it turned out good. You know, the rabbi comes home one day and he says, your son went off to war or something like that, and the guy comes back with all these medals or something, you know, kills himself on the medals or whatever it is. But the bottom line is, I don't know what's going on. One of the things I do know is one of the sweetest things in life is to accomplish something rather difficult and hold God's hand through the whole thing. And one of the sweetest things in life is to have recovered from this illness. I wouldn't wish being a fat kid on anybody. I wouldn't wish going on your first date at 35 years old on anybody. But you know what? I'm alive today, and I haven't eaten compulsively in 15 years. I haven't eaten a Kit Kat bar or a Butterfinger bar or Raisinets or Almond Joy bar in 15 years. That feels real good, more than 15 years actually for that. It feels really good. You know, I get a sense of accomplishment in life and things. And that's the grace of God. Those are the blessings of God. That's the grace of my higher power. And I'm alive today, and I'm in a beautiful setting here. I'm in a beautiful setting here. And that's the grace of God. Len?
Yes, so Arlen. One, I can take you back on Len's question regarding Bill. And, you know, you said he tried LSD with malaria. Even in the big book, it says, you know, if you're having trouble, eat some chocolate, you know. And so the idea of switching addictions and that addictive energy that might be amongst all addicts, what can you speak to in terms of...
The steps will work, and they work unilateral, and they work universally. So no matter what you see in life, the steps will help me in those areas. I see a lot of that in a way. I've been here 35 years. I see people compulsively spending. I see people who take to alcohol. I see people taking to drugs. I see people taking to sex. I wish I was one of them, but I see people taking to these other things, and the steps will work no matter what part of life is challenging for me. The steps will work. And it doesn't say the steps only work for this addiction or only work for that addiction. It works on them all. And when I have a God-centered life, I have a good life. When I don't have a God-centered life, I have a life of madness. It's madness in my head. I'm glad I can't invite you in there. It's madness in my head. If you just knew the shit that goes on up there sometimes, it's amazing. But my self-talk is so much more wonderful when I work the steps. Yes, Dan.
Yeah, Harlan, this is, I have my own thought on it, and it moves off, but I wanted to get your share. It's a letter I received, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago. Is that one of the phrases, if God has his way, you will recover from compulsive overeating.
Right. Yeah. He can utilize you and send you in to help the sick, to help the dying, to help the afflicted, where he cannot send anyone else. But if he can't choose you, then he'll have to choose someone else. And there are people that don't want this, and there are people that won't do the work. There are people that don't want this, and so there's nothing we can do with them. And I'm reminded of something that I know very well, and that is, if I went to the nearest hospital, and I went to the cancer ward, and I talked to the people there that were mortally afflicted with terminal cancer, or AIDS, or leukemia, and I said to them, come with me, come with me. We're going to go to the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club, and we're going to work some steps. And we're going to give our lives, our will and our lives, over to the care and direction of a higher power. And we're going to list our resentments, our fears, and our sexual harms done others. And we're going to tell this to another person. And then we're going to go and ask God to remove our defects. And then we're going to go make amends for the harms we've done other people after we become willing to do so. And then we're going to pray to God every day of our life for guidance. And when things come up, we're gonna talk about that too. And we're gonna pray and meditate, and then we're gonna go help others. And you will not only not have cancer, but you will have a life better than the best you've ever known and you could ever imagine. They would say, "Take me. Take me. What do I do to get this thing? I will go with you." They would sign over their portfolios to you. They would sign over their homes to you. They would sign over their cars to you, their bank accounts, and go with you and do what you want. You go up to that same hospital, to the 5th floor, 6th floor, 8th floor, and you call on some guy that's 500-600 pounds, and he's got the shunt from dialysis, and he's diabetic, and he's got the neuropathy in his feet, and he's got all these amputations that he may be looking at from both legs or whatever it is. And you say to him the very same things, and he'll tell you what you can do with your program because he's going to do this on his own. I have been taken and I have looked in the face of death many times. I have been taken to treatment centers and I have been taken to hospitals as I travel the country. And I'm reminded of somebody I called who was probably 650 pounds in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've been to Philadelphia many times, not many, but I've been there 3 times. I went to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they insisted that on the way to the retreat center that I must visit this young man. And he was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. You could barely see his eyes. There was so much flab on his face. And he was just massive. And he was laying there in the bed. And I didn't say very much to him because I could tell within seconds that he did not want us there. We were sent there against his will. He did not want us there to the point where he deliberately crapped in the bed to get rid of us. He crapped in the bed. And he forced himself to crap in the bed so that he would have to call the nurse and it stunk in there so that we would have to leave. And we did. That's the length that people are willing to go to not recover from this illness. And that guy helped me because I saw the illness, and not long after we were there, he died. He died. He's no longer here. Crapped in the bed to get rid of us. And that's the power of this illness. That is the power that this illness has on you. Okay. Yes?
Yeah, my name is Lee. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lee.
And I just wanted to reflect on our session last night. When we get to the part of the book, Doctor's Opinion, where it talks about the effect. And I've heard that all my program life, 35 years. And it's interesting how we talk about the disease being a progressive disease. Well, our recovery is progressive as well. Every day seems to be different. I learn new things. All the times that I've read that and heard that, said that, about the effect that alcohol produces, and, you know, as a child, before you have the opportunity to taste alcohol, we learn how to get that effect with candy bars. Might have to be Fifth Avenue candy bars. And we read it last night, and we hear your explanation, and I thought about it. It's the first time that I realized that there's more to this effect than just the effect of alcohol, because everyone out there drinks alcohol, and the effect of alcohol in the human body that produces that effect. But for the first time, I realized how unique I am with the ism of alcoholism or compulsive overeating, is that there's an effect that happens in addition to the effect, the chemical effect. There's something that happens in my brain that's different than the quote normal people that have that effect. There's something that creates this phenomenon of craving. And I didn't make that connection in all these years until last night. Intellectually I understood it, but you know, we talk about the spiritual experience we have that really reaches our soul, where there is something that changes in your attitude at that moment. And that's what happened for me last night, that I realized that's what makes me different. It's not the effect alcohol has on me, it's the effect, in addition to the effect of alcohol, that just speaks to my soul, that makes me want to yearn for that relief, which is what you talked about. And it's interesting, I wouldn't have heard that if I hadn't been here. I wouldn't have discovered that. And, know, it's my friend talks about the Bobby Euro expression, you know, my ears are attached to my ass, and if my ass isn't in the chair, I won't hear what I need to hear. And I just wanted to share that, to see what we learn when we come to these things, and we're willing to hear it.
Thanks, Lee.
No, thanks.
We have time, I think, for one more or two more at the most. Yes.
Has your conception of God changed over the
years? Oh my God, yes. 4 years ago in May of 2010, my then wife walked in the house and demanded a divorce. And I have a kid that doesn't speak to me. And I have a business where I used to make five times what I'm making now. Absolutely changes over time. And one of the things about my God is he's adaptable. And he's flexible. And sometimes I have to fight or die. I'm single again, and in every sense of the word again, I'm reinventing myself. I'm single, I'm struggling back in career, I'm 60 years old, and I'm like a newcomer when it comes to my business, and I'm trying to find something to augment that income, another thing I can do in the afternoons. And absolutely, as life changes, as every day comes, there are challenges which create a need that I have for God that may never have been there before in quite that way. So absolutely it changes. And if I need to, I'll fire his ass today and I'll get a different God. I'll absolutely get a different God. Yeah.
What would you suggest for someone, I'm not sufficient for me, not someone, not my neighbor, If I've been looking for, maybe I haven't been looking that much, and this is why I'm asking, for opportunity to be of service, and I hear, like the story you said about the young man who cracked his pants to get you out of that room, this is, you know, what I keep hearing in the literature, is a program of attraction, not promotion. So if there's no one in the rooms where I'm sitting who wants what I've got...
Go to different rooms. Go to different rooms, start going to different meetings, stop going to the same hardware store asking if they sell dresses. You've got to go to different meetings. And I'm not so much a believer that going to the same meetings in that kind of situation is good for you. Maybe God is really trying to nudge you into some different meetings. Some of these offshoot groups that you see OA have and some of that, you may want to change that up a little bit too. You know, you get people to gravitate to the this group and the that group, and all those groups have the answer. No, go to different meetings. Don't be afraid to go to some different meetings. And you'll find people there. But the first thing we need to do is have it, and then the next thing we need to do is give it away.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah, hi. You mentioned several times about the North Scottsdale
Fellowship.
Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And even though I live in California, my kids are in North Phoenix, not too far away. I've gone there. I've gone to a few meetings. They were in Glendale, OA meetings in Glendale. Mm-hmm. I looked and tried to find other meetings. I never found that in North Scottsdale.
Go online and you'll find many, many meetings in Greater Phoenix. There are many, many meetings in Greater Phoenix.
Just look up OA Phoenix.
Yep. OAPhoenix.org. And our meeting list is right on the website. Wow. Absolutely. And if it's not, I'll give you Greg's number and you can yell at him. He's on the website. He was across the street.
It's a reminder for us, isn't it? 12:15 today.
Oh, okay. Well, I figured we would break up at 11:45. It gives you a chance to kind of stretch your legs or do what you need to do before lunch. I'm not going to compete with lunch. I'm going to try. Okay, last one, yes.
Yeah, in 12:12, Bill talks about compulsive eating, gluttonous eating as a character defect.
Right.
And I had a fellow that I sponsored one time that had reading that he decided that his compulsive eating was a character defect. He tried to treat it that way. Mm-hmm. And he ended up dying of this disease. Mm-hmm. I got dying of this disease. And you talked yesterday about AA's coming in and having a difficult time with our program in dealing with the reading. Do you think there's any correlation between that, this idea of it being treated as a defect of character and as the disease?
I don't think it's a defect of character. I think it is a symptom of defects of character. Compulsive overeating is not a defect. Compulsive overeating is a symptom of the defects. Now, let me explain that. The defects of character trigger what? The mental twist. When I'm selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, angry, scared, it will wake up the mental twist, and my mental twist will send me into the food in search of the better. Thank you. Because my brain wants to feel better. So when my defects of character wake up the mental twist, or when things go good for me and my brain wakes up the mental twist, it sends me into the food. So I know that this is just semantics, but compulsive overeating is not a defect of character. It is the symptom of defects, because our brain says, I want to eat an almond joy bar, and that will make me feel better. Now, we just heard from somebody that shared about drinking. Drinking does not give me the effect at all. I have consumed alcohol on about 20 occasions in my life and never gotten the effect once. Why? It doesn't do for me what it does for the alcoholic. I've had about 20 drinks lifetime, and I've never finished one. I throw them out because I hate the taste of it. I can't stand the smell of it. I can't stand the taste of it. So it's not a defect. It is the symptom of defects of character.
So if an alcoholic is eating for the effect, he's really not sober.
I would say that if you are an alcoholic, it is not up to me to determine whether you're sober or not. What I would say to you, I was sponsoring you and you were an alcoholic, which I am not, so I don't know why I'd be sponsoring you, but if you were sponsored by me and you were 350 pounds, 360 pounds, you were a mess, like some of these guys that you see in AAR, I might tap you on the shoulder and say, let's sit down and have a conversation about this. This is getting way out of hand. But I'm not an AA sponsor. I'm not an AA member. I went to AA for 9 years, and I was grateful to them for embracing me because they all knew my secret that I am not an alcoholic. However, since alcoholics get girls and fat boys don't, I have a deal with God that I'm coming back as an alcoholic drug dealer. Okay, let's break for lunch.